Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I am John Schmelke. He is Paul Dottino. The phone number, 201-939-4513. Apologies for the late start. A couple of technical difficulties we had to overcome, but we're here now. Hope you had a great weekend, the first weekend without NFL football since back in August. So depressing,
John.
And we have a long way to go before something new happens. And, Paul, the Giants obviously still have not finalized. Let's start here. They have not finalized their assistant coaching staff yet.
Yeah.
And the real trick of it is, and we're seeing this with more teams than just the Giants around the league, and some fans were confused by this over the weekend, and I answered them on Twitter, but I figured we can address this first off the top.
Okay.
The NFL classifies their coaching positions into two broad categories, head coaches and assistant coaches.
Yes.
There's no technical promotion to go from one assistant coach job to another assistant coach job, even if it's, say, a running back coach or quarterback's coach, the offensive coordinator. An offensive coordinator position is considered at the same level as a position coach position. Therefore, teams are not required to grant permission to coaches that are position coaches and allow them to interview for coordinator positions.
That is accurate. The key word there being required.
Mm-hmm.
In most cases, and I can't give you the stats because I don't have the stats over the last decade as to how many guys were talked to and how many guys were denied. I can't give you those numbers because I don't have them. But it's commonplace. It is certainly usual. In fact, it is most likely that when an assistant coach gets a request from another team, that if it's going to be an unofficial bump, and by that I'm talking about within the assistant coaching pool, they will be allowed to do so. That happens more often than not. That's about the only thing we can say, John.
And now sometimes it doesn't happen for teams within a division, for example. They don't want to give an advantage to another team that might be a direct competitor to them. So it does vary from time to time. But those are the rules, folks. If a team does not want to allow one of their assistant coaches to interview for another assistant coach position, even if it's a coordinator spot and they're just a position coach, they're not required to do so. Okay. The other topic we wanted to touch on today, Bill Barnwell, who does a good job over at ESPN, he gets into a lot of the kind of the advanced statistics and stuff like that, but he also does a good job breaking down film and things of that nature. So he kind of took a look at each one of the NFC teams, NFC East teams specifically on this specific day, and kind of broke down five things he really thinks they need to do in order to make an improvement for the following year. Paul? Mm-hmm. Why don't you start and kind of give us your opinion on, or why don't you just kind of go through the first thing that he mentions here for the Giants, and we'll have the discussion from there.
Yeah, and we certainly want you guys to chime in because I think it's a great topic this hour. You know, whether you agree or disagree with his five proposals, or maybe there's just one in particular that you like or dislike. His number one proposal for the Giants, he says, announced that this will be Eli Manning's last season in a Giants uniform. He is of the belief that they should just put this right out there now, say it is what it's going to be, and move on. And this way everybody has some certainty. I don't think it would be a surprise to you to hear me say that I would totally disagree with that move.
Well, here's the problem. And it's totally connected to the second part of his five-point plan, and that's where I'll jump next.
Please do.
Where he believes the Giants should draft a quarterback with the second overall pick in the draft. And if you do happen to do that, then his first point maybe makes a little bit more sense.
A little bit more.
Correct.
Not necessarily a lot, but a little bit more, because you're obviously investing the future of your franchise in that guy who was taken number two. And in today's world of the NFL, if you take somebody that high, by his second season, you want him handling the ball.
Correct. Absolutely. Which is why he has those two linked. Now, here's another thing about Eli Manning. He can still play. You can still win games with him as quarterback. He can be part of a good offense that helps you win games in the National Football League. He's under contract for two more years. There's no reason to think he's not going to be here for two more years based on his contractual status.
Right.
So the question then remains, how does that transition work? And obviously, there were some miscues with that this prior season. We don't have to get back into that. We know about it.
Yep.
So the question is then, how do you handle that move? And, of course, that invariably does get linked to the next draft pick. And I think another part of that, Paul, quite frankly, is how well does the team play this year with Eli Manning? If the team struggles a lot again, and you say, well, you know what, maybe we're farther away than maybe we thought we were.
Different story.
Then maybe you make that decision. But I think that's why probably it makes a little bit more sense to wait and see, at least until the draft, to see what you do in April, and then you make the decision from there.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I mean, look, let's just say for argument's sake, the Giants make a Jaguars-like turnaround, all right, from 3 wins to the playoffs, okay? As long as Eli Manning is healthy and they're all of a sudden a competitive team again that's actually making a little bit of noise, I can't think of any good reason why, despite his age, that you would not want to take Eli into 2019. Why?
And here's why you can't announce it now, and while I'll disagree with Barnwell on this, even if you draft a quarterback in April and you're still committed to Eli Manning as your quarterback in 2018, but you say this is his final year, well, what happens if you go 10-6 or you go 9-7 and you win a playoff round and you're playing in the divisional playoffs and you have these veterans on defense that have a short shelf life and your shelf life on that side of the ball is to try to win in the next couple of years? And let's be honest, look, Jarrellus Jenkins and Snacks Harrison or Vernon, they're probably not going to be great for another 5 years, but they're probably going to be good for another 2 or 3. So Do you go away then from the veteran quarterback and reset on that side of the ball while those guys are still in their prime on defense? It becomes a very tricky situation, which is why I said a couple weeks ago, to me, you have to treat everything right now as a year-to-year proposition. Yes.
Agreed.
You assume Manning's going to be here for 2 more years. That's his contract. That's your assumption. But I think you have to maintain a level of flexibility here based on what the facts on the ground are. And as you well know, those facts on the ground in the NFL can change really, really quickly.
On one play.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, in any event, I also should add that with his number 2 point about taking the QB, he does not suggest which one it should be.
No, he says, and I believe, and I'll actually read the quote on this from Bill, it's honestly probably less important who they take than what they do to support their new passer. And this is something we talked a lot about. Do you surround him with offensive linemen? Do you surround him with weapons of wide receiver? Things like that. And that leads us to the third thing on his list.
And that one is really, really interesting because he talks about Odell Beckham Jr. saying he needs to be re-signed. Now, Odell's coming off of serious ankle surgery. As we both know, we've seen the scar, and it's nasty. At the same time, we've also seen him do a lot of his rehab, and he is certainly on track, and the Giants are extremely hopeful that everything is going to be fine with him this year. But number 3 on the suggested list is that they re-sign him now. Part of the reason is because he's looking at the free agent class, the different receivers, the kinds of money that they're making, obviously understanding that another year down the road, Landon Collins is going to be looking for a big payday on the defensive side of the ball. Now, what he does do, in addition to suggesting that this deal gets done, he actually proposes the structure of a contract that he believes Odell could get, saying that the numbers are flexible, but he thinks it's the good framework for a deal. The most interesting part about that suggestion for me, John, is that it's a 7-year package.
But looking at how it's designed, the Giants could get out of the last 2 years of that package and incur no cap hit.
That is correct.
So in reality, the contract he kind of suggests here would be a 7-year, $115 million contract. But in effect, the way I'm reading it, it would be more of a 5-year contract worth $80 million. Because that's when the Giants can get out of the deal if they wanted to.
Yeah. And I would tell you this. I don't think it's a bad suggestion from the franchise's point of view, although I still believe you need to find out if Odell Beckham Jr. is still OBJ. He still needs to get out on the field and show what he is. If you're going to give him a mega deal, he needs to be a mega player.
Now, generally speaking, broken bones, especially in the ankle area, do not generally lead to serious long-term, consequences and, degradation of skill.
Right.
That's generally not something that happens, but whenever somebody goes under the knife and it's a leg and they run for a living, it's something you have to think about.
Well, his suggestion is to guarantee $69.5 million. That's a lot of lettuce. And I'd want to make sure that ankle was fine before I gave that up.
And to me, this offseason is kind of when it's tough. to make an agreement with him, because the Giants will be thinking, well, you know, maybe we can get a little bit of a discount here because he's coming off ankle surgery. And Odell's going to be thinking, well, hold on a second. I still think I'm the best wide receiver in football. Right. I'm not interested in taking a discount. So,
right.
And again, maybe the Giants aren't thinking that way, but I think certainly a player that isn't ready to play football today and is still rehabbing an injury, and, you know, just to go to a different sport, the Knicks are going to face the same thing with Kristaps Porzingis this offseason. They can offer him a max extension, mm-hmm. something that they would have offered in their sleep a week ago, mm-hmm. but now that he's rehabbing a torn ACL, well, yeah, he's 21 years old still, but can you offer him that type of money coming off of an injury? These are kind of things that you have to figure out. Now, they can wait to see if he gets back and then maybe have a conversation in training camp when they see he's back and running around and he's 100%. Then you have that talk maybe. If you feel good enough about the ankle then sure, maybe you can. But, again, I feel like a lot of times with these players that are at the top of their position, and I have no idea if this is the case with Odell. I'm just going on past history, Paul.
Right.
It's very difficult to come to an agreement with their agent, who's often looking to break the bank,
yes,
for a player that's at the top of their position group before there's pressure points and leverage on both sides to get a deal done.
You're right.
It's just hard. It's just the way
You're
the marketplace
right.
works in any sport with any player.
And part of that is because when that agent knows he has the superstar of superstars, he is trying to set the bar for everybody else.
And he, for example, and the one point that Bill Barnwell wisely points out is that the minute Odell signs that contract,
there's a ripple effect.
The next guy up is going to try to get more.
Mm-hmm.
Just look at Jimmy Garoppolo. Does anyone believe Jimmy Garoppolo is the best quarterback in football? But no, he makes the most money. Because he's the next guy up.
Ridiculous.
So the second Odell Beckham Jr. signs that contract, and if he signs his contract, say, before Mike Evans does, who was mm-hmm. also in his draft class, guess what? Mike Evans is going to want to make more money than Odell Beckham Jr. That's just the way it goes.
That's it.
So that's the point, then the timing that might be tough to figure out a little bit.
Interesting, though, if you go to the article, folks, on ESPN.com, the breakdown is there as to how he sees the numbers working out.
Right.
And the cap hit for the Giants, especially over the first 2 years of the deal, $10 million in the first year, $12.5 million in the second year, and $15.5 million in the third year, those cap hits, because of the way this deal is structured or the proposal is structured, very, very chewable for the Giants.
The reason a player would like it that way is by having such large cap hits and guaranteed money still in the 2020 and 2021 seasons would make it very difficult for the Giants to cut bait and cut a player with those years still on the contract.
Yeah.
So basically, like I said, it turns into a 5-year deal basically with the Giants. It would be very difficult for the Giants to let him go before that 5 years without having a significant amount of dead money on the cap.
It really works in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah,
I give him a lot of credit for it. Again, the problem with the timing, though, I would need to see Odell be Odell before I did this.
Well,
so if you said to me, do you want to do this deal in October after he's played 5 or 6 games and I know that he's the guy, I would not be objecting to that.
Well, I remember this, too. We didn't see Odell here until minicamp last year either. We don't know how he's going to handle his offseason workout programs this year. We'll have to wait and see.
Don't know.
All right. Number four,
yep.
Clear out some cap space. He mentions a number of veterans on the roster that, you know, you could decide to make some moves on to create extra cap space. And obviously Dave Gettleman has done things like that in the past.
He has. There are some easier ones to talk about. We're not going to get into the names, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's sensitive and we don't want to insult anybody.
Well, there are people on the roster.
Right. But clearly there are some guys, and you can figure it out yourselves, folks. There are some guys who are older, who are making some larger amounts of money, and those would kind of be the guys you would look to, especially guys who may have been dinged up over the course of the last season and maybe not produced as much. I think that suffices to say the answer.
And no one's going to be surprised by number 5, Paul.
No. Improve the offensive line. Should that not have been number 1 instead of number 5? That's to me. I don't know if he meant it to be put in this order specifically, or he was just throwing 5 things out there. But to me, that was the most laughable part about it, is that improve the offensive line was number 5. He also has moving Eric Flowers from left tackle to right tackle as part of this deal. And he does mention the possibility of a couple of free agents coming in here as well as being part of that process. Clearly, the Giants need to take a two-pronged process here. They do have to sign a free agent or two, and they do have to draft a couple of guys.
And the point that he points out in his article is that you still get to the perspective where if you want to improve at left tackle, how do you do it? Do you try to give Eric Flowers another chance there? He's had a lot of chances. That's something the Giants will have to decide. But if you decide he's not made for the left side, then what? There's basically one left tackle in free agency in Nate Solder that's going to be available. Mm-hmm. Who knows if the Patriots let him leave. I'm sure, why wouldn't you want to stay with the Patriots? You're in the Super Bowl every year.
Depends on how rich he gets, because you know Belichick is real quick to
That is true. Absolutely. And he's on the wrong side of the 30. The Patriots don't like to usually give out big money contracts to people on the other side of 30.
But Tom Brady's getting older too.
Right. An offensive lineman can be an exception to that rule. They can generally have a little bit of longer career than some of these other spots. So if you don't go left tackle then in free agency with Solder, and you know, you probably can't spend big time money on two offensive linemen in free agency. It would just be too costly based on the Giants' cap situation.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't going to be a left tackle with the second pick in the draft that's worth taking.
No.
And frankly, I'm not even sure there's one in the top 10 that's going to be worth taking.
It gets real sketchy at that point, I think.
But if you wait all the way to your second round pick, I'm not sure there's somebody that's sitting there at the 34th overall pick that you can expect to come in and start at left tackle on day number one. I think that's a big ask. So if you go out and, say, get a guard in free agency, spend a lot of money, you move Flowers, say, to the right side or move him inside,
okay,
guess what? You're still sitting there without tackles. So what's your answer at tackle? And I think that's – if there's one tricky thing that Dave Gettleman has to figure out this offseason, it's a similar challenge to what he had in Carolina where they were looking for a left tackle for a few years.
Oh, he had it? Yeah, go ahead.
What
go
do
ahead.
You do there?
Yeah.
How do you figure that out?
Hey, let's not kid ourselves. The Vikings had the same problem this past offseason, and they signed Riley Reiff and Mike Remmers.
There are plenty of teams with problems with left tackle. It ain't unique to the Giants.
Now, again, this is one of the reasons why I still advocate first and foremost of making a trade and moving down somewhere into the top 15, because in the top 15, you could probably get Zeus.
So you'd be willing to go down
McGlinchey.
You'd be willing to go down to 14 or 15.
I've been saying 12, to be honest with you. That's kind of where my bar is.
Well, look,
I'm willing to expand it to as far as 15 if I have to, because I'm thinking that either Williams, Zeus, or McGlinchey are going to be there at 15.
I don't know if McGlinchey or Zeus are left tackles. I don't. I mean, McGlinchey, I've been told, is a much better right tackle than a left tackle.
I tell you what. You know what? You know, the other day when you sent me a Twitter video about a lineman?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Okay. There's another one that just came up today. Somebody posted some left tackle footage of Zeus Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, man, I did not bookmark it. I should have bookmarked it. Maybe I can find it for you. And, oh, my goodness, he just gobbles up the poor defensive end. Just absolutely gobbles him up. I haven't gotten heavy into my tape work yet at all, folks.
No.
So I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to tell you that I've done the work and that the guy is great or the guy has these flaws. I'm not going to tell you that. But what I am going to tell you is, certainly when you see a clip like that, you do kind of open your eyes and salivate. He just gobbles the guy up. Let me see if I can find it. You go ahead and go on to your next point. And if I can find it on Twitter, I'll call it up, show you, and we'll tell you about it. He just obliterates the guy.
Well, my only point to you is that if you're looking to trade down here, Paul, there aren't that many teams that would want to trade up to where the Giants are. And once you get past the Broncos, and I talked a lot about this last week with Lance and Jeff on Thursday and Friday about the potential of trading down and the benefits of it. And if you look at the teams, who are the teams that you think will be willing to trade to number two? All right, I'm going to go through the picks with you real quick. Okay?
Go ahead.
Obviously, you got the Colts at 3, no. The Browns at 4, no. The Broncos at 5, yes.
Yep.
The Jets at 6, potentially yes. Bucks at 7, no. Bears at 8, no. Niners at 9, no. Raiders at 10, no. Dolphins at 11, maybe. Though
yeah.
I think Gase likes Tannehill.
I think Dolphins are a possibility.
Bengals at 12, probably not.
I don't know about that.
Redskins at 13, they just gave Alex Smith the whole warehouse.
That's not going to be a deal.
Packers at 14, no, that's not happening.
Get to the next one.
That's where I was going to go.
Bingo!
The Cardinals at 15.
That's why I have expanded my reach to 15.
That's a big drop, man. That's a big drop.
I think you get one of the guys. Now, let me just see if
if you drop to 15, you're going to get one of those three tackles.
I got to believe so, right?
Are one of those three tackles worth good enough to be that 15th pick? That's the question. Hey, look, and we know that Brown has, and this is Orlando Brown's kid, whose nickname is Zeus. He's a monster. He's 6'7", he's like 350, he's a tank. At 15,
I can't find the clip I'm looking for.
Is he worth the value of that pick at 15? Or is he going to be too much of a developmental guy? Because he has the length and the size to obviously be a left tackle. He's done a good job. Or, you know, Connor Williams, McGlinchey, take your pick. All three of those guys have a lot of talent and a lot of ability. Are they worth that pick at number 15 to move down from, like, for example, like, would you rather have Quentin Nelson?
He's a much better
player than these other guys. He just doesn't play as big of a position as need.
Right.
That's the question you run into. You know what I mean?
Well, and this is why we continue to say, folks, you got to deal with free agency first. Because if they're going to stockpile a couple of offensive linemen in free agency.
Especially if they're guards.
That makes all the difference in the world. And I know we like to talk about best player available. You know, you don't want to necessarily go to the position when you're drafting because you box yourself into a corner. But the fact remains, okay, you need two guards starting, you need two tackles starting, and the Giants need starting caliber players. So after you figure out what happens in the middle of March, that's going to give you a better handle on how you're going to approach the guard-tackle dilemma in the draft. And that, to me, John, is a big part of this question because you're absolutely right. There are plenty of available offensive linemen in the first two rounds of this draft. I think we all agree on that. There are plenty of them. But which ones are guards, which ones are tackles, and which ones are plug-and-play guys? You got to deal with free agency first.
Correct. But unfortunately, like it is most years, the market for guys that can move in and play and start a tackle for you on day one, you bring them in, even in free agency, is very, very scarce.
You're going to pay.
Absolutely. 201-939-4513, whatever you want to talk about. Giants offseason, we're here for you. And we'll go a little bit longer today, so we should start a little bit late. We'll try to get you your full hour. Let's go to Christian in New York. He will lead us off. Hi, Christian. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good. Paul, I know that you love Davis Webb, and I'm not trying to be like a wise guy or anything. I'm just wondering, like, do you actually love what he's bringing to the table, or do you love the idea of getting your future quarterback in the third round a little more?
Everything that I say about Davis Webb is based on my personal experiences with him and watching him firsthand, being able to see him around the facility, talk to him on a regular basis, seeing his workouts that he used to do with Frank Cignetti on game day, again, hours before the doors were open so that anybody else could come into the stadium and see. I was there watching. So I've seen a whole lot more than most people. So I'm giving you a firsthand impression. I feel very good about this kid's potential.
Unfortunately, Christian, and this is, I think, why there are some questions here. Well, yes, what we've seen around the facility is great. What we've actually seen from him on the field has been very limited.
Correct.
Even in training camp, he was only in opportunity stuff with rookies and guys that really don't play the positions that they were playing. Mm-hmm. And we saw him in some, you know, against third stringers in the fourth quarter of some preseason games. So while what you see makes you think he can do it, we haven't seen him do it in real situations yet. So that's the real trick.
It's kind of like the stockbroker mentality, you know? You can predict all you want, and you can look at all your indicators and say, they make me feel really good.
Right, right.
And then after you buy the stock at 12 o'clock, tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, it either shoots through the moon or goes bad on you. It's always going to be a gamble. It's always going to be a crapshoot, but so is drafting a quarterback at number two.
Sure does. It's all about probabilities, Christian. Which guy gives you the best percentage chance of finding your next quarterback? That's what it's about. And the cost associated with that risk, obviously.
Correct.
Yeah, I just know it would be, like, incredibly convenient if you ended up getting your franchise quarterback in the third round going forward. And I just wonder if maybe you were more excited about that fact in itself, maybe more than
I could care less what round he was drafted in. I'm looking at the kid as just a prospect. I don't care where he was taken.
But I think it's fair to say it excites you that you wouldn't have to use your first round pick this year on a quarterback.
Well, it's obviously, as you said before, the cost involved with using that pick on a QB is very expensive. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at Russell Wilson was taken later on. Joe Montana was taken later on. Jeff Hostetler was taken in the third round. I mean, you know, this would not be the first time ever that a starting quarterback was taken in the third round. All right? I get it. It doesn't happen on a regular basis, but over the course of NFL history, it has happened before. We're not talking about a first once-in-a-lifetime opportunity here.
Right. I know. There's just had to be a reason, you know, why he didn't go first round. And, you know, but there's obviously a great chance he could, you know, end up panning out. But
let's put it this way. I'm going to make it simple for you. I'm going to ask you a question. Don't you think that Pat Shurmur, who has a history of doing very good things with potentially, I don't want to use the word journeyman, but with less than stellar superstar quarterbacks.
Guys that don't have that super top tier talent that people look
for. Let's be nice about it. That's a great way to put it, John. And he has taken those guys to some pretty lofty heights. Okay?
Yeah,
so let's give Coach Shurmur some credit here too.
Yeah, I mean Shurmur I'm very excited about. I feel like you're gonna have a certain high enough floor of quarterback play just having him on your sideline.
But, okay. So give him some credit and make it work.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to say that this is the year that you have to draft a quarterback either, because there's a couple of good ones on Georgia right now, and I don't think that they would force Eli to leave before his contract is over. So I'm really looking at that as 2020 and beyond when you're thinking about who's going to play quarterback for you.
Well, you know, and that's a really good point, John, and I want to close your call on that comment because...
Thanks, Christian. Appreciate it.
Again, I'm with John. It's a year-to-year proposition with Eli right now. You can't look too far ahead. But if you do lean on the assumption that he's going to at least finish out his contract in 2019...
Which is fair.
And that's very fair, okay? Understand that if for some reason you change that roadmap and he only has one more year here, and you decide that you are going to jettison him going into the 2019 season, there will be a cap cost to that. You are going to pay to do that. So there will be a hurdle. There will be an incentive not to do that as long as he still proves that he's healthy and can play. You're going to lean toward the side of keeping him in 19 because it will cost you to get rid of him. Therefore, once again, do you want to spend a number two overall pick on a quarterback who then has a real chance of sitting 18, 19, and at the earliest he might even see the field is 20, when you already have a quarterback who's in the building who's already sat for a season already? That's doubling up your cash and throwing it in the fireplace.
No, that is putting – and look, people would argue that – you can't dedicate enough resources to finding your next franchise quarterback, and it's that valuable a position. But, yeah, if you go down that road, you are putting a lot of assets, whether it's financial with Eli's contract like you spoke about, or draft picks, which are, you know, even more valuable assets than money in my
opinion. No question.
And you're putting a lot of it into that one position. That's fair. The question is how much do you value the probability of getting it right there and the importance of that to the franchise. Ben. Dallas. He's up next on line one. Hi, Ben. How are you, buddy?
Good. How are you doing today?
Hello.
Good. I had a question a little bit about the coaching staff.
Sure.
I know that the guy from Minnesota was blocked from an interview. And then I heard about Daryl Bevel, and I knew he got released from Seattle. And I know a receivers coach was released for Denver. The defensive backs coach was released from Miami, and the offensive line coach wasn't even in football last year. So is it that hard to find good assistant coaches now, or is it just everybody is so protective of their own that you can't they can't move around at all?
Bingo. That was the last thing. You hit it, man.
There you go.
If let me put it this way. If you're a team and you have an assistant coach that you really like, okay, and they want to make they have the opportunity to make a lateral move. We're not talking even about an upgrade in a move. We're talking about a lateral move from one position coach for one team to a position coach for another team. And I have a guy that's my, let's say, running backs coach that I love and I think he's fantastic. Why would I let him go to a team I might have to play in a couple years to be a running back coach there? It doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, it's hard to fill out a staff. Generally speaking, when you fill out a staff, you have to fill out that staff with guys that don't have jobs currently or happen to be at the end of their contracts with another team. So your pool of guys to choose from can be very, very limited depending on when you're looking for that staff.
I should add, though, too, I want to just be fair to give a complete picture here. Let's just say a running backs coach from Team X is being sought after by Team Y, and Team X decides we're not going to give you permission to go. They might, in some instances, and it has been done, give a little extra lettuce to that guy. You know what? We want you. We denied you the chance to talk to that other team.
Correct.
We're going to give you a little bump in salary because, you know, we do appreciate you, and we want to show you that we're happy to have you here, and we're not trying to, like, really do you over, but we like you so much, we want you to stay.
Which is why you might find the quarterback's coach somewhere making almost as much of an offensive coordinator because the team maybe denied him that position somewhere else.
It can happen.
Yeah.
So they try to kind of smooth it over.
Is there a concern about the people coming in, especially the ones who were out of football last year and the guys that were released by other teams? I mean, is it because they were bad coaches or is they just the system is just changing that much?
I don't think there's a bad feeling at all. I mean, you have situations where, you know, sometimes guys will take a job because it's the only job that's being offered to them. For example, I guarantee you that maybe there were – I can't guarantee it, but I bet you some of these giant coaches that took jobs elsewhere this offseason took those jobs because they were guaranteed jobs. I mean, you can't wait and see what the Giants are going to do with their head coach position and take a chance that head coach is going to want to hire you, for example, and pass up a surefire job with another team. It's a very risky thing to do for your family. These assistant coaches aren't rich guys. You know, they're not – you know – a lot of these guys are not making, you know, much more than six figures a year. If that, if they're a lower-level assistant coach, they can't afford to be out of work for a year if they have a family and they're paying a mortgage. So if you have a job that's offered to you, you got to take it. So that's a lot of times why you have guys that will get released from a team and move on because you might have a new head coach in that spot and they might be doing a little bit of a shuffling with their coaching staff. For example, Matt Eberflus is a guy, and I'm not even sure if the Colts are keeping him. He was one of the guys that was supposed to be on McDaniel's staff in Indianapolis. And he was a linebackers coach for the Cowboys last year. And he was somebody that they thought had defensive coordinator potential. But because Dallas had a down year this year, they decided to reshuffle their whole defensive coaching staff just to try to make some changes. And they did stuff on offensive side of the ball, too,
okay,
just to try to make some changes and switch things up. So they ended up letting a guy go that they thought could be a defensive coordinator in the future. And they let him walk because they just wanted to make changes. And they weren't ready to move on from Ron Marinelli. So you'll get guys moving around in the assistant coaching profession because of reasons like that.
Yeah, and I also want to make it very clear as well that there are two frames of thought when you're hiring a new staff. One is, I want guys who I've had a connection to during the course of my career.
That's a big one.
And it's a very big one. In fact, more often than not, that's how guys wind up landing on a staff.
Coaches want to be comfortable with their assistants. That's just the way it goes.
Right. And if I did business with that guy before in one other spot, doesn't matter if it was 5, 10, 15 years ago, there's a good chance he's going to boomerang back into that office somehow, some way, and you're going to be working with him again.
You always want the devil you know.
That happens more often than not.
Correct.
Now, the other reason to hire an assistant coach is, you know what? Has nothing to do with a connection. I've never worked with him before. But guess what? When Pat Shurmur said to himself, James Betcher has just been a real son of a you-know-what defensive coordinator to go up against whenever we played him. I was so impressed with that guy. He did so many things to cause headaches for my teams wherever we played them. This is a guy I think I want to have to give other people headaches.
And Ben.
That happens too.
Yeah. And Ben, I'll add a third thing there too. You get recommendations.
Yes.
Pat Shurmur could be very good friends with Bruce Arians, and Bruce Arians might have said, yo, this guy James Betcher's the man. You better go hire this guy or for another position coach. And that's how those connections get made too.
So those are the three basic reasons why an assistant coach lands a job, where there are a bunch of openings. It doesn't necessarily mean that that guy was unwanted by someone else or did a bad job somewhere else. There are other reasons why you scap somebody up.
Okay. That makes
great
sense.
Have a good day.
Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it, buddy. Let's go to Kevin in Florida, stay in the South. What's up, Kevin? How are you, pal?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Listen,
I'm going to give you, I think, my reason why I don't think there's a chance in the world that Gettleman goes after a quarterback with pick two. Because I've heard him say that if you draft a quarterback in the first round and you guess wrong, your organization is back 5 years.
Absolutely.
And he can't run the risk of his very first pick ever as general manager blowing up in his face. I think if he was to draft one of these California boys or someone and it didn't work out, it would take a couple of years for him to dig out from under that. And I think what he is almost certainly going to do is look for at least one deal in the first round to move back, fix the rest of the team first, and deal with the quarterback issue down the road.
Yeah, but Kevin, that is easier said than done, though. You can't just deal with the quarterback position down the road, because if you build a good team, right, and you win 7, 8, 9 games, and you're sitting there with the 14th, 15th pick in the draft, and let's say Davis Webb doesn't happen to work out,
right,
then what do you do?
Well, I think you had a couple options. Number one, and I think in the modern game, there may be a free agent quarterback out there who would be someone that could at least be a –
You're going to rob a Briggs truck?
And Kevin, that is very rare.
Who would have predicted 2 months ago that Nick Foles is going to be starting for somebody next year?
Kevin, look at it this way. In the last 10 to 12 years, how many free agent quarterbacks would you want that were on the open market in free agency leading your team for a long period of time?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know how many would be around, but I'm saying
less than a handful.
He has to – it would almost make sense to me if he said, look, let's say I trade the pick and I get a number of picks and I fix two or three spots, you know, for the next few years, you know, a couple of linemen, maybe a line, whatever he feels he needs. And let's say, worst-case scenario, Eli's skills have eroded by the middle of the season and Webb is not the answer.
Okay.
He might have to, in the next draft, he might have to trade up a little bit if that's what it takes to get the guy. But in the meantime, he has already fixed some things. And if he has to invest a few picks like the Giants did when they got Eli Manning, you know, that might be the cost of doing business at
all right,
that
see,
point.
Now, Kevin, you just came back with a great answer because you know I'm on board with what you're saying. My first priority is to trade the pick, move down, get a bunch of picks, and fortify all the other holes. I'm with you.
That's right.
Okay? I'm with you.
But
here's the correct answer to what John raised to you, because you're not going to have an easy time picking up a winning quarterback for any kind of reasonable contract in free agency. It doesn't happen. The correct answer is, if the Giants turn out to be a middle-of-the-pack team in 2018 and Eli isn't long for the team, the correct answer is you find out about what Davis Webb is over the course of this year.
I agree.
And if he's not and Eli doesn't have a future, then you got to go draft a QB next year. And if you got to move up, you got to move up. You're better off going that route that you are trying to buy a quarterback because it's going to cost you $25 million.
All right, but here's the trick, though.
Right.
But all the benefit you just got from trading down this year and getting picks, you're giving all those picks back when you're trading up next year.
No.
Yes, you are.
Because you will already have those guys in your camp.
Holes,
that's the difference.
And you're a better team.
That's the difference.
You're losing picks down the road.
That situation,
but that's okay.
You know,
that's okay.
Giants did it when they got Eli.
You're right. You're right. The reason you're right is because if you fill those three or four holes now, those holes are going to be filled for the next 5 years anyway.
Yeah, but
it's okay if next year you got to trade two or three picks. It's fine.
But you always have to add extra talent. You always have to add extra talent. I mean, not having your first-round pick and a second-round pick and more than that for a year or two in a row, that's going to be problematic.
Let's put it this way. The only way that this doomsday scenario occurs
right
is if Eli doesn't have much of a future here. Davis Webb turns out not to be a guy worthy of starting in this league, and the Giants are mediocre to where they don't have a relatively high pick to go get a QB.
In fairness,
that's the only way this doomsday scenario works.
Even if Eli's good, I mean, if Eli's good and they win between 8 and 9 games over the next 2 years, okay, and you decide Davis
Webb's next two years, or this year?
2 years. Let's say 2 years.
Well,
let's say you stick with Eli Manning and you win 8 or 9 games the next 2 years. And in those next 2 years, you figure out that Davis Webb's not your future. Let's say that happens.
Right.
And you're sitting there, like you said, you traded down. You have a pretty good team. You got some talent on defense. You have an okay offensive line. You're not a bad team. You're sitting there with the 15th pick in the draft. Then you got to trade your one, another one, a two, and then something else to move up. So you, basically, here's my point, though, is that eventually you're going to have to pay the piper unless Davis Webb works out, which is a possibility. I get that. I'm not discounting that possibility at all. You're either going to pay the piper now and use the second overall pick on a quarterback, or then you pay the piper in a year or two, and you move up to the second overall pick, and then you have to get a quarterback. Oh. But you're eventually going to have to use that resource to get that quarterback, unless Davis Webb works out.
But you're also taking a lot of assumptions into account, like the Giants will be middle of the pack, and Eli's going to be able to play for 2 years, and play at a decent
that's
level.
True.
That's a lot of assumptions. To me, the only doomsday scenario, Webb flames out, Eli is unable to give you winning football for the next 2 years, and the Giants wind up in that 6 or 7 win range. And now, to me, with all three of those, you're right. This is a disaster, and now you're going to have to pay through the nose to move up in the draft to get one. I get that.
And that was the other
part.
But for
those three things to happen,
and by the way, that was another thing that Dave Gettleman said, and you're right. He said at the Senior Bowl that the worst thing you want to do is – you know, basically pick the wrong guy and then you're set back for 5 years. He also said the worst thing you want to do is be in quarterback purgatory.
Right.
Where you have a really good team, you're sitting at 500, and then you have to pay the piper to get a quarterback.
Right.
So,
and that's what that is.
So those are those two opposing scenarios that the Giants have to try to balance to avoid both of them if they can.
I just think the odds are not great. I don't think it's likely that doomsday scenario occurs. That's my point. And I think that's what you're trying to say, Kevin. So I'm with you.
Yeah. I say when you're 3-13, that first round draft pick the next year has to have an impact for you to get back to at least going into week 15 with a shot at making the playoffs.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is, you know, like I said, the Giants did this when they traded for Eli, and that worked out okay. And, you know, Carson Wentz, they paid, you know, for that. Maybe once every 20 years you got to do that if the circumstances fall that way. It's close to doing business. You know, it's not going to fall every year that the draft is going to work out the way you want it based on your circumstances. So this year I think the Giants have an advantage where they can trade the pick and fix a bunch of holes that need fixing. And in a year, if they say, well, the quarterback thing is doomsday scenario, Eli's done and Webb's not the answer, hey, if we have to pay for a guy, at that point you fixed all the holes, it's the cost of doing business. And you have to that's what you have to do. They did it when they got Eli. And it may have to be the way they do it now.
All right, Kevin. Thanks for the call, buddy.
And full disclosure, Kevin, I was in favor of keeping Kerry Collins. I thought he had 3 or 4 really good years left. I thought he could get him back to the postseason and maybe another Super Bowl. And I did not really favor trading all those picks for Eli Manning. I was a Big Ben guy coming out of that draft. I thought he was the best quarterback in the draft.
And that was the other guy that Ernie did like in that draft, by the way.
That is correct. And Wellington Mara was on board with me. Let's keep Kerry Collins.
And but quite honestly, you know, I think, and me and Bob Papa talk about this all the time, I think all three of those guys wound up in the right spots.
Without question.
I'm not sure how Roethlisberger or Rivers would have wound up here with their personalities.
I can't say that enough of times.
All three
went to the best place that they could go to.
Yep.
And bad news for Rivers, he didn't get any jewelry.
No, that's true. I'll say one other thing, too, and I haven't made this point yet on this show. I make it on every other one, but I always like to make this as my point. Folks, if the Giants are not sold on any of these quarterbacks this year and they think that none of the four are their future franchise quarterback, they should trade down. And I'll throw one other caveat out there in this scenario we're talking about where, you know, they go 500 a couple years and then Eli's done in a couple seasons and Davis Webb's not the guy. The problem you run into also is that how do you know there's going to be a quarterback available that you really like in those seasons? That's the other problem, which is why if there is a guy you really love, and you're in a position where you don't have to do anything to get him, and he's just sitting there for you on a platter, and you are convinced he's your guy, I have trouble saying no to that because it could be really – remember, what happens in 3 years? There is a guy you really love. But what if the team picking first also loves him?
I know.
And then you can't get him.
I know.
You know what I mean? That's all I'm saying.
Jamarcus Russell, Tim Couch, Johnny Manziel, Ryan Leaf. Let's just keep going down the list.
But even the year that Andrew Luck comes out, and you think he's the guy, guess what? The Colts ain't traded the pick.
Oh, I know.
Why would they trade the pick?
Every one of those teams that took those other quarterbacks that I just mentioned were so convinced that they would have sold all the land east of the Mississippi to get those guys. And what happened?
I would make the argument.
Flame out.
I would make the argument that those guys probably convinced themselves that they were convinced, if you know what I mean. They sold themselves on it because they knew they needed it. I have faith look, say a lot about.
Marcus Russell was a robo quarterback. No way he's going to miss.
Say a lot of things.
Okay, nice going.
You can say a lot of things about Dave Gettleman. One, and this is to the caller's point, he's not going to draft scared. Or he said he's going to afraid to, you know, put all his eggs in one basket in the first year and pick a guy. He's not going to say no because he's afraid it's not going to work out. That's not how Dave Gettleman operates.
No, it's not.
And I also believe that Dave Gettleman trusts his evaluation, the evaluation of the people around him, where he's not going to make an abstract decision. He's going to make a decision based on what he sees and what his people see that he trusts. Mm-hmm. And that's how he's going to make his decision.
That's why we should.
Yep.
He shouldn't be listening to anybody, including us.
absolutely not us. Maurice in Montclair is next. Hi, Maurice.
Hey, what's going on, gentlemen? How you doing?
Hello. Hey, Maurice. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Listening to all you guys break down so many scenarios and all these different things that can happen is really crazy to me, and I commend you guys for being able to handle all that stuff. My call today is going to be pretty, like, generic. You know what I mean? I'm a fan that just sits back and just, like, hopes for the right moves to happen. But I'll say this. With the whole quarterback situation, I'll ask you, Paul, because you've been around probably the longest between you and John. Is this the most critical, even though we know we came off the worst year, but is this the most critical year you can remember in recent memory of Giants football? Because I would think so.
Well, only because you're talking about the changing of the guard with the franchise quarterback. We're getting to that point where it's going to have to happen. It's inevitable. He can't play forever.
I'll say this offseason is the most important offseason that there's been since I've been here because they have the second pick in the draft. And when you have the second pick in the draft, you can make a huge impact. And whether you're making a pick there or trading it or doing whatever you do with it, when you have the second pick in the draft, you best not mess it up.
I mean, if you want to go back and play revisionist history, look, in 79 when they drafted Phil Sims number one, and look what Phil Sims wound up doing for this franchise. Look what Lawrence Taylor did for this franchise when he was picked number two overall in 1981.
What about the Eli offseason?
And then you look at the Eli trade in 2004. And, you know, so there are other ones that have turned out to be incredibly historic. But going into the offseason, this is probably about as important an offseason as I've ever done, and I'm starting my 36th, and that's a long time.
Right. So, definitely. It definitely seems that way to me. I'll try and make my call quick. I'll just roll off a few thoughts. I think this is definitely one of the most important years. I would like to see definitely a big – I'm not going to say a Landon Collins type of jump, but a significant jump in Dalvin Tomlinson because I think he did show, like, great traits. And I think, like, Giants football, really, if you look at the Super Bowl teams and how they're structured, we were never built on flashiness. I mean, as far as, like, how the NFL is now with receivers. I understand we have one of the top-tier receivers, but the offensive line, we all know the defensive line and things like that. I think this year will be an interesting year. I think it's some optimism for me because I know Eli's a competitor to the heart, and I know it's quiet. You don't really see it. But I know after the type of year he had and what the speculation's floating around, he wants to get back to good football. Odell, definitely Landon Collins. So I think it's some motivation there. I'm going to ask a question, and then I'm going to leave you guys with a few questions. I'm going to ask you this first question. You can be politically correct, or you can give it to me how you see it. But thoughts on JPP?
What do you want to know?
No, I'm just saying you guys' personal thoughts on him and the season he's coming off and You know, because me and my friends talking, we're at, to the point where, like, look, man, we're kind of done making excuses. Not that they wasn't significant excuses for why his play dropped in, you know, previous years as far as the back injury, the finger, the this, the that. You know what I mean? But I just want to quickly get your thoughts, and then I'll leave you guys with a question.
I think anybody who grades JPP would like to see him give them more bang for the buck. I think that's very fair.
And more consistency. He tends to get his sacks in these bunches in one game, and then you'll have five or six games where you don't even notice he's there on passing downs. I think you'd like to see some more consistency,
too. He is a terrific two-way player. Does play the run a lot better at this stage of his career than he did when he came in.
Correct.
Okay.
Though I think he did dip a little bit in that category this year from last year, in my opinion.
Agreed. Agreed. But still better than he was his first 3 years in the league.
No argument.
And so, no. But I do think for the kind of commitment they've made to him, they do need some more production.
Okay, definitely. And I'm gonna ask you to first take this down. Do you guys have a pen? It's quick. It's just a little game.
Give me a second, John. My stomach is kind of... I may have
you
to.
Okay.
I may have to.
Go! Get out of here! Go! All right, Maurice, I got you. I have my computer in front of me. That'll have to do. Maurice, did we lose Maurice? We lost him. Oh, sorry, Maurice. We cut you off by accident. Give us a call back tomorrow, and you can make your final 2 points. Okay, I'll get you back on. I promise. I'll carry the rest of the way because apparently Paul's running to the restroom. Coach Marvin, he's up next. Hi, Coach Marvin.
How you doing, John?
I'm great, Coach. How are you?
I'm okay. My good friend Paul's not there.
Paul says he had to go use the men's room. It must be some type of emergency that I really don't want to know anything about.
Oh, God. And we're just getting bonded together. what I was calling is because I wanted his input on this, is because I feel that pretty much the Johnson position sort of not to get it wrong. I think everybody has a little bit to what he has said, no matter what they do. If they take a quarterback, like you said earlier, if that's the guy, take him.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be a big deal for anybody. If they think they want to take if Barkley there, they want to take Barkley, no big deal, take him. And I kind of been going back and forth, but we won't know what people want to really feel about it until the draft gets close and free agency is done.
Yep.
But if they want to trade the pick, that's just as good. That was one of my initial feelings in the beginning until Barkley. Paul was saying the draft down, and he would go at 15. Love Paul, but I agree with you, John. That's too far to go. I wouldn't go down to.
Well, Coach Marvin, I've had this conversation, so I'm going to play the role of Paul Dottino here, and I'm going to get really excited for you. So here's what you want to do. You want to sit there, and you want to try to get – a tackle. You have to have a tackle. Eli's blind said must be protected. So if you go down, you go to 15, you can get Zeus Williams. This guy is a machine. You have Connor Williams. He can play. Matt McGlinchey, Notre Dame produces great offensive linemen with Mike McGlinchey. Any one of those three guys will help you right away protect Eli's blind side. That's what you have to do, Coach Marvin. How was that?
For a second, I thought I was listening to Paul. No, my thing is, I think anybody can go up. Everybody's looking at it that it could be a quarterback. A team can be drafting up to get somebody else also. Barkley, if he falls to that number two spot, it's not saying anybody can say, you know what, we want to go get him and get him.
It's not impossible, Coach Marvin, but I think if a team wants to trade up, it's most likely going to be for a quarterback.
That's the norm, yes. That is the norm. But you got to remember – Julio Jones wasn't a quarterback.
No, it's a good point. It's a good point.
But I agree with you. I say draft down. I think the team that I would like it to be, I would hate to see it because the player will be playing in MetLife. It's the Jets.
I agree.
It's because of their winning and losing record in the last decade. It haven't been that good. So if you trade with the Jets, just say it's the Jets. You get this, you're going to get their number one, which is their sixth pick. You're going to get their next year number one, and I believe you should be able to get a three or two from them.
Yeah, Scott, I would make sure if I made that trade with the Jets, I would require that they give me their second-round pick this year, and if that means not getting their one next year, I'd live with that, but I want to make sure I get that number two pick this year.
John, if you go back and look at the history of those picks, you have to get their number one for next year. Look at when they did Eli. They gave up their number one to San Diego. Look at the Julio Jones. They gave up their number one.
No, I hear you. No, look, Coach Marvin, I agree with you. I think it's really important. I think, though, given if you do trade down, your goal is to get players now to help you. And that pick in the start of the second round is so valuable. Remember, you don't know how bad the Jets are going to be next year. What happens if the Jets turn it around? Then all of a sudden, you're getting what, the 16th or 17th pick next year? Well, I can guarantee you you're getting the 36th pick this year. So I think there is some balance there.
I understand that. But if they making the deal, and they're going out to get their quarterback as the guy, then in that case, I want your two this year. And I want your one next year.
I agree, and if I was making the deal, I would make that same demand. I agree with you.
That's going to be on the table. Now, that's on the table, and they take that deal. Now, I'm with you. I go with Nelson.
Oh, absolutely.
Nelson has to be the guy. Nelson can actually go third in this pick. Some people say he can go second.
I agree.
But I take Nelson if he's there. Then, like you said, if you got the two twos, in the second round, then you should be pretty good. But everybody's going about the quarterback and, well, we should get a free agent. No, you don't want to go that route. How are we going to have to give up the kitchen sink to move up in the prior years? No, you don't. You're going to have two ones that's going to give you enough firepower to move up. Now, if you don't have a quarterback that following year, me being in Boston and watching the way New England used to deal with the draft, you keep your number one or the best number one you have of next year, you trade out of that other one.
Thank you, Coach Marvin. I got to run, pal. I appreciate it, man. Sorry about that. I got to make sure I get one more call before we wrap the show. Scott in New Mexico, he could wrap us up. Hi, Scott. How are you?
Hey, John. How are you?
Doing great, Scott.
I had a question about the combine, but listening to the quarterback conversations, I wanted to run a scenario which I had run through to some guys about four or five calls ago. What's the possibility if, say, Dave Gettleman doesn't believe in Webb Davis, Davis Webb, rather,
yep,
and the quarterbacks don't perform at the combine or don't do as well as everyone expects them to do? Is there any remote possibility, and I'm going to run this by you, and you tell me your honest opinion. There's a quarterback sitting out there, Colin Kaepernick, which I had brought up weeks ago. He's a mobile quarterback. You're going to have a transition line no matter what you have. He's only 30 years old. Would the Giants actually consider somebody like that, and that would fill the quarterback gap? And allow them to.
No, Scott, honestly, I don't. And frankly, it doesn't have anything to do with the off-the-field stuff, so that would be an issue as well. You don't set up Eli Manning's replacement and sign somebody that's already 30 years old and relies on a lot on his mobility to be successful. I don't think that's a formula for success.
Okay. My question on the combine scenario, how much credence do the Giants actually put in the combine? Say they go there, and the players that they're looking at don't perform as they hope they will perform. Will they reevaluate at that point, or will they still stick to what most of the observers say are the top picks in the draft, or do they actually make a true evaluation at the combine and say, hey, this is the guy we want? I'll take the question off the air.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate the call. Good stuff. And again, Coach Marvin, you can give me a call back tomorrow. You can finish your point. I apologize. I cut you off a little early there. I think with the last regime that was here, the combine, height, weight, speed probably meant a little bit more than what it will mean to Dave Gettleman and his group that's here this year. That's my impression. Dave Gettleman is a film junkie. What he sees on film is what matters to him. Now, that doesn't mean what happens at the combine is not important. For certain players, I think the combine is essential. It's really important for wide receivers to give you a certain 40 time. I think it's important for cornerbacks to give you a certain 40 time. I think you have certain players like, say, a Marcus Davenport that didn't go up against great competition in college. I think you want to make sure that he has the athletic traits to compete with people that are at a very high level. I don't think how the quarterbacks throw at the combine are going to have much of an effect. I think you go by what's on tape and what you get from them off the field. Some positions, you worry about explosiveness. You got the three-cone drill, the five-cone drill, the shuttle, things like that. That side-to-side quickness is involved in that, too. That's important. So I think it's a piece of the formula, but I do not think that what a guy does at the combine will force the Giants scouting staff to tear up what they have from their film work during the year and start over. They'll take what they have. They'll see if what happens at the combine is so extreme, it might force them to go back and reevaluate the tape and maybe take a second look at it. But it's what they do in games during the college football season that is the most important. Everybody, thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate it. I can confirm Paul Dottino is standing alive and well, which means, unfortunately, you'll have to hear from him again this week. I know you're disappointed in that, but he'll be back. And we'll see you tomorrow. It'll be Paul and Lance tomorrow and Wednesday on Giants.com. Everybody, have a great day.